I'd like to welcome you to the first podcast of the Relationship First series, which we hope, frankly, will have hundreds of conversations with different individuals in their own walk of life in terms of how they have come to place relationships first and what they've learned about the benefits and practices associated with putting the relationship first in everything they do. As you know, we're committed to helping people put relationships first and learning to create the way they relate, and hope you will pick up some specific ideas through these short podcasts with folks in many different roles and situations. Today, we're starting with, I can't tell you how happy I am to be chatting quickly with our good friend Ferdy Serum, who has been an associate and friend and pioneer in putting the relationship first in his particular area of interest, which is not one. It comes from music to education to technology to just generally creativity in our lives and in our work. So,
Wow, George, you can't see me blushing on the screen because they only hear the audio, but I got to say, those are pretty nice words. When you said first, what came to my mind was my friend Margaret Ryle, who is one of my great mentors, and she started the learning circles with AT&T back way before the internet ever had pictures. And I remember her saying something has always stuck with me. You can't learn anything from someone you don't have a relationship with. Mm-hmm. And since I'm all about learning, and yeah, teaching is part of that too, but I'm about the learning piece of it, I realize that the first thing I have to start with is building that relationship with anybody if I'm going to work with them. And so we have to start there. You're right. As human beings, we have to recognize and honor each other. And from that, all good things happen. And if you skip that part, I think you're making a bad mistake. So it varies from culture to culture. I know in Turkey, when I got to visit there, if you walk past any shopkeeper's shop, the first thing they're going to do is invite you in for tea. And sometimes tourists think that's just a huckster kind of thing. They're just trying to make it so you feel like they're manipulating you by offering you the tea. But actually, in the Mideast, and specifically in Turkey, they want to know the person that they're in front of, and they welcome you in as they would welcome you to their home. And that little thing of the tea is the way that they start the relationship. So I think if we pay attention to what's going on, we can benefit from what people all over the world do around relationships and starting as a starting point for everything we do. I'm right there with you.
Well, as you know, we have had the opportunity to work together in many different ways in Santa Fe, and I have followed your career as well as you've followed some of mine, but I've never had the chance to ask you, which we want to be asking people quite a bit, which is what kind of inspired or tapped your intuitive sense that the relationship was the most important aspect of your interaction with others. Any stories, any sense from your past of what cemented that in your own?
Yep, it's easy to, I haven't thought about it a lot, but it's really easy to answer your question. My fifth grade teacher, Margo Eli, who's the one who got me to explore my musical side and actually had me teaching music at the age of 11 in her classroom. She was the one who brought me outside of my normal way of doing things. I'm more of a hermit. I'm kind of a introverted person, even though I'm a performer. It takes energy away from me to be in a large group of people because I'm always, you know, hyper-focused and all this other stuff. It's hard for me to be at ease. So for most of my time up until I got into her class, I was very happy to go off on my own in my mind and, you know, everything else. She got me to understand people and cultures, and she challenged me to be interested in things that I wasn't so much interested in. That was when I was in her class, was right after John Glenn had gone up into space, you know, and I was a STEM guy. I was all about science and all of that. And she was about the people on the Earth and about how could the people on the Earth get more interesting. And so she exposed us to food and other cultures and stuff like that. And I think what she did that was brilliant was she provided the experiences that then allowed me to open up my mind beyond the habits of what I was comfortable with.
Well,
so I think I'm going to thank Margot Ely yet again for showing me that it's the people in the world that are just as important as the interesting things in the world.
I know one of the quotes looking through for our new website, it's quite direct, but it says it all is one from Martin Luther King, who mentions that we've got to stop having a focus on things, but start focusing on people. And you just mentioned that sense that people and are what matter most, I think is simply stated, but more than elegant, it makes a huge difference because we live in a society where people, most of us tend to focus on the tasks surrounding the people we're interacting with and not on the relationship that supports whether that task is satisfying or even feels worthwhile.
Well, you got to remember what Jean-Paul Sartre said too. And this is the famous thing, is a two-edged sword. So yes, every solution that's ever going to come to our problems is going to come from people. But we also have to realize that it's people that cause most of the problems we have. So Sartre said, hell is other people. And I think that's what he was talking about is, yes, people absolutely are the answer, but we get in our own way if we're unskilled at knowing how to work with each other. And that's when we interpret differences as negativity, and that's what leads to a whole host of problems. But in the way I've seen you work, we celebrate the differences, and we make people feel welcome because of their different perspectives. So it's the way we relate that's very, very important. It can be very healing, but if it's done wrong, it can be harmful. So we have to get skilled at doing this so we can do, like they say in medicine, first of all, create no harm, right?
I couldn't agree more. And we don't have a recipe book, but we have some understanding here at the Center for Relational Learning and relational leadership on what behaviors, what sensibilities would lead to a positive relationship, one that produces increased joy and satisfaction, at the same time having a good impact on what people are trying to accomplish, feeling good and productive at the same time.
Well, that's why I like hanging out with you, George. Every time I hang out with you, I learn something about this because you've spent so much time studying it and you have sought to understand it deeply enough that you can convey, I'm going to use the W word, you can convey wisdom to people. That means they don't have to necessarily make all the same mistakes that you did. You're distilling down the things that you've done. And every time I've come and met with you, even if it's to just look at some technology or stuff, I end up picking up some of that wisdom off of what you have spent so much time doing. So I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very glad that you're sharing this work with the world.
Well, I'm looking forward to sharing it more with you and others, because I must say, after this forced sabbatical with the COVID coming along, forced sabbatical meaning I couldn't travel and work face-to-face with all my friends and associates in Australia, and I hadn't been able to make as much progress on this theme here in the U.S. because schools especially were just so set on, can we raise a test score and can we get kids to attend, as though just attending the school and doing well on a test was the key to success. And so I was ending up working quite a bit of time in Australia, where people were very receptive to building that relationship between the family, school, and community and within themselves.
Well, I might be dreaming. I might be wishful thinking or I might be perceiving something that's just at the start. And I hope it's the latter. I hope that what I'm perceiving is that as people have gone through the last year and they've had all of these challenges, many, many people are thinking, you know what? There was a lot of stuff in our way of doing what we needed to do, and that stuff needs to go. We don't need to keep doing things that weren't working before, that are certainly not going to be working now. And it is time to reconsider the purpose of schooling and how we do it and who we do it for. And if it isn't serving everybody, in my mind, it needs to go. I had to make a decision in the last couple of days about whether I was going to call myself a digital equity champion or a digital equity warrior. And I've come down, I'm a peaceful kind of person, but I've come down on the side that no, this is serious business now, and I want to support people that are ready to be these sage warriors who are going to fight for justice and fight for the rights of everybody and make sure that what is needed by everyone is provided to everyone. And if that's going to upset people, so be it. But I think that at this point, we have an opportunity that we've never seen before. It's time for us to seize the day, and it's time for us to act on what we know is best for people and let the chips fall where they may.
I love that distinction between a warrior and an champion, advocate, yeah. A champion. But I'd love to hear for a minute or two, especially with your expertise, because one thing that's come up this whole year and a half is the value of digital technology and its role in education, and especially how that can be humanized or made to be something that promotes and enhances a learning relationship through the digital technology. And I know that's been your practice forever, but boy, how many people and articles and discussions have been had about if I'm learning online at home and I don't get to see my teacher except through a screen and I'm not back in the school building with them, this just leaves so many opportunities to understand in a deeper way what digital technology presents in terms of a way of building a relationship and putting that relationship first in what you're doing.
That's the spoiler alert. You've given everybody the answer to the whole thing. We could go on for a long time talking about all the research and all the anecdotes and everything else. But as Margaret Ryle said, you can't learn anything from anyone you don't have a relationship with. And so the purpose of the technology is to connect us. And how we use it to connect us is only limited by our imagination. Mm. So it has to be an asset model rather than a deficit model. Mm. If I was to say, if we were doing a podcast right now, if we could bring him back to this world and we had Ray Charles on here, and we were talking to Ray Charles right now, we wouldn't be saying, well, Ray Charles is so sad that you can't see. Mm-hmm. It's so sad that you can't read music, that you can't study the works of Bach or Beethoven because your life as a musician, you would be so much more enriched if you only could see, right? And yet what Ray Charles gave to the world, he didn't need to see. He went beyond those sensory perceptions to reach a level that's indelible and it's touched so many people. And so when you as a teacher or a learner are realizing I'm trying to make a connection with somebody, there's almost limitless ways you can do it. I was working with a friend in North Carolina, and she and I have never met face-to-face. But when the time came, I sent her a box of green chili from Hatch. She had never had green chili. So I sent her a box of green chili, and she got to have it. And she sent me some barbecue sauce from North Carolina and some pecans from North Carolina. And we were able to have a connection based on our interests and based on other things. So the first thing is having that willingness to want to make a connection with that other person. And then finding whatever way we'll do it that works. And that's not about the technology. It's about the intention. When you have the intention, then you can find a way using the technology to do whatever you want.
But that's so well said, and such a byline for us about your intention. Yet earlier in that little discussion, you mentioned that the purpose of technology was to connect folks.
Mm-hmm.
Speak a little bit more about that history or that understanding, because it seems that over the years, technology has been used much more by people to become more efficient, to get something done quicker.
The first computer I ever saw, I saw a computer that was one of the earliest computers ever made. And the thing that is scariest about it is where it was and what it was made for. It was this green machine that looked almost like a torpedo tube or something like that. And it was in the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. And the first computer that they made, they used to keep records of where the Jews lived so that when it was time to round them up, they didn't have to waste a lot of time looking for individual people. They knew that on floor number 7 in room number 23, there was a family of Jewish people there, and it made it easy for them to round it up. My point is that the technology itself is value neutral. It's only going to magnify the values that you bring to it. So when we think about our society, we've become a spectator society, where what we do is we consume things. And so the biggest use of technology right now on the internet is streaming entertainment. And why is that? Well, if you think about everybody being locked down for the last year and you see how binge watching became a thing, it used to be if you're watching a series of shows and there was 26 weeks in half a year, mm-hmm. and there was going to be 26 shows that they showed, and then they were going to show the reruns for the other half of the year. That was one thing. But now you could watch all 26 shows in a row if you felt like it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to ask yourself, if I'm doing that, if all I'm doing is watching and inhaling and taking things in, where's the balance? There's nothing in nature that has that much unbalance. So I think that a healthy balance is when you inhale and exhale, when you are taking things in and expressing them back out. And that is something you can do, but you have to do it on purpose. That's where the intention part comes in.
Yeah, that's well said, doing it on purpose, because I was just going to comment, which you know many people comment, and you gave a good example with the streaming, but the fact that so many young people can't get off the phone and the social media platform at night, and parents tell them you need to get off, and yet they're the ones who are on it themselves and modeling it. What then, as we're looking at the future now, what suggestions do you have about making that shift from how the technology captures us to where we capture the technology to enhance and develop our relationships with others first, since that's our ongoing theme? Because I do believe, and I know you do too, that if we can use the technology to enhance our relationships, we're all going to fare better. And we're seeing many examples, as you just gave, how technology seems to rule over us. Any quick suggestions?
Well, I think it helps to understand the context and situation. There are a couple of layers to this onion. First of all, it helps to be aware of your own emotional weather. What's going on inside you? What do you feel? Do you even know what you feel? We're so distracted most of the time that it's very hard to get to a place where you're quiet enough and you have enough practice to understand what you're feeling. Once you feel those things, then one of the first things you're going to feel is how often you're being manipulated.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, and so every time we're dragged into Facebook, we're dragged into Facebook because they've done the science, the neuroscience, to understand the effect of the dopamine of seeing a connection to someone you care about who either liked or didn't like what you did. And because of that feedback, that's why people are spending hours and hours a day scrolling on that stuff. And I think it's important to understand a balance in what you do. It's almost like your diet, right? You wouldn't only eat one food for everything. You'd have to drink something, right? And you have a variety of choices of what you eat. And then you see how the things you eat make you feel. And if you are paying attention to what you're doing and what is happening around you in general, then you also can focus that attention on what the technology is doing. And you can begin to see what proportion of your waking life are you doing. And then the other thing I think that's important about it is understanding the difference between real time and any time. So right now, you and I are sitting here in real time. We're in the same room. We're talking. We're able to see each other's body language. We're able to look out the window and see that it's raining. We have situational awareness of what's going on, and that's real time, right? But one of the big powers of this technology is that you can do things at any time. So if I've created something I want you to see and it took me 2 or 3 hours to do it and it takes 5 minutes to watch it, once I've put it up onto the internet, you can watch it at any point, and then we can say, let's talk after you've watched it. And we can be very deliberate about the most precious time we have, which is the real time. And I think the Zoom has really exhausted people, because Zoom by definition is real time all the time, with sometimes 20, 30, 50 people on there. What's happening to you psychologically and emotionally is that all of your channels are open and there's so much flowing over them that you really can get Zoom fatigue from having too many meetings. And I've had it now where a lot of my friends have decided, you know what, I'm just so tired of Zoom, let's just talk on the phone.
I'd rather
just talk on the phone right now.
Yeah.
And so getting that balance between when you're doing things anytime or whether you're doing things in real time, and do they need to happen that way?
Well, it sounds like the Zoom becomes a combination of anytime and real time, and that's where the overload comes for so many people. Because so many people are just saying, I can't be real this amount of time, 6 hours a day and every Zoom, and not having the eye contact and a chance to kind of feel the benefit of a real insight from the screen. It's with your lovely analogy, it's any time and real time, too much of it combined.
Well, I think the other thing that we forget, and these are things that we knew before technology, but we kind of have been mystified by the technology or distracted by the technology. Another part of that balance is the balance between study and practice. And so as a musician, when I would go to study, sometimes I got to take master classes with really, really good musicians. I remember this one drummer that I studied with. I lived an hour outside of New York, and I would get on the bus, take an hour ride up to New York, and pay $50 an hour. This is like in 1980. Pay $50 an hour to study with this amazing drummer. And then I'd get on the bus and go home. Well, you know what? If I didn't spend 3 or 4 hours for every hour that I studied with a guy to work on the things that he had showed me, if all I did was get on the bus every week and spend $50 and go up and take a lesson and come down and then wait another week and go up and take another lesson, it would have been stupid. He would have fired me as a student because he would not have seen any growth. You have to be able to put in the time to work through the things that you're learning, and then come back to it. And I think that's where this balance is. What you do in front of the computer ought to be to share with other people what you've done away from the computer. And so it's a way of sharing and magnifying the impact of the time by saying, these are things that I can do on my own. These are things I need to work out. I'm doing all the prep, what have you. I'm doing my practice to get better. And then I have something that I'm going to share. And when I share it, I want those reactions to be in real time. And then I want somebody to do something on the basis of what I just shared. So you get this feedback loop going in this really nice to and fro. It sort of mirrors nature in terms of times and tides and seasons and stuff like that. And if you can have that organic quality to your use of technology, chances are you're going to have a more enriching experience.
Yeah, definitely. Chances are, from the thing you said earlier, that part of that balance is knowing who you are and emotionally how you're responding. So you knowing what's being asked for at another level than just the report or a present or an aspect of a product. And that's one thing we're trying to have people emphasize, which you mentioned a bit earlier, which is that deep relationship to yourself. It's kind of like a self-knowledge or many, many groups from Google on to other regular businesses that are saying the key is emotional, social literacy, and a sense of understanding yourself and who you are and what you bring to every interaction. You gave a great example there of further preparation. Sometimes it reminds me of a story on another musical sense. I can't remember the name of it. He's the best guitarist in the world. You might know.
There's a lot of lists like
that. Oh, no, I know. But
you're talking Andre Segovia or something.
Yeah, it was Segovia. And Segovia was at a school, and this was the School of Performing Arts that my lovely wife worked at for a number of years. And they wanted to practice intently and come to improving themselves, and they were willing to do everything. And Segovia was talking to this student at the Performing Arts School, and he asked, "What do I do to get better?" And he says, "I'll tell you what to do, but you have to promise me that you're going to do it before I tell you." Because he was anticipating it might be a little different than what he expected. And he said, "I'll do it." And he said, "Good." He said, "Put down your guitar for the next 6 months and don't touch it." He could not believe the advice. He did it. Segovia came back 6 months later, and his playing was at another level. And I'm sure that's because he said, "You're still not deeply in touch, connected to the work. You're still at a transactional performance basis, thinking that if I just repeat and repeat and practice that way, I'll get better." I think that's an interesting encouragement that Segovia had, and something, especially as we're coming into this one, that I find we want to promote, which is that deep, deep sense of getting in touch with who you are, your purpose, your motivation, your relationship to what's come before. Because again, we still live in a culture that's just hyped by producing, doing, and a task orientation. And as you've just said, and can't believe how good this is to be one of our first podcasts, the technology is now front and center, but not because it's the answer, but because it does allow us to really now reconsider how important the relationship is and what that means and who we are in relation to each other.
Well, this was the interesting thing about starting with the internet in the very early days. In the very early days of the internet, there were no web browsers. There were no pictures. There was just text. And there wasn't even the internet as we know it today. There was just emails that were stored and forwarded, sort of like a game of telephone, all around the world. But the people that were doing that, I think what made it really so powerful was that there were such amazing distances involved. You literally could talk to anybody anywhere on the planet, and you picked up the cues from the way they expressed themselves in writing. But the main thing is, over time, that relationship was able to deepen because we had shared experiences. The entire planet experienced Chernobyl and had to think about what happened when Chernobyl blew up and what happened, you know, what were the implications of that type of thing going on. And the funny part was, it wasn't until years later that many of the people I had been communicating with that we actually got to meet face to face. And typically it would be international conferences or things like that. So once a year, 18,000 people would go to the ISTE conference. And when you finally saw the person that you'd been talking with for 3 or 4 years, you wouldn't notice until you saw their name tag. Oh my God, that's you.
Oh, I remember some of those stories.
And the richness is possible based on the intent.
And the connection. So even though it wasn't face-to-face, many people mentioned how much connection was created and then how important it was when people had the opportunity to meet and fill out that connection.
Yeah.
You know, the power of the internet and technology to allow us to establish those lines of connection are fantastic. Utilizing them
And here's where I see the great potential of your work, because you work internationally. I had an experience this morning where I called a friend of mine I haven't talked to for a couple of months, and we had to do a check-in just to see where things were at. Well, this guy Eloy Garza is my friend, and he lives in the Rio Grande Valley all the way down, way, 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 way down on the border with Mexico. And he has created this program with students. It's a student-led program where he has his students become a marketing company, basically like any grown-up marketing company would be. And they go out. They first started with ma and pa employers who didn't have a website, would never have, you know, nobody went to college. But they didn't have a clue about what were they going to do to try to develop their business and connect with the community. And these kids went out and researched it. Well, they got so successful, they started getting higher and higher up to the point where they were working with multinational, multi-billion-dollar companies doing as good work as the adults would do. And it blew everybody away when they saw what these 16, 17-year-old kids could do. Well, I know for what I'm doing in New Mexico, I need his program here, but there's nobody here that knows how to do his program. So the fact that we can have a distant relationship with him and his students to try to help us set up our own version of it here in New Mexico makes me very glad, because if I didn't have the relationship with the guy and had gone down there and visited a few times and actually seen it myself, as I'm sure is true with you with your visit to Adelaide and all the other places you've gone, you know what you can bring back to your own community through the relationships that you develop. That's where I see the potential. There are people doing great work all over the planet who don't know about each other, but with the degrees of separation and the relationships we have, it's going to accelerate us finding out about the things that could help us and give us access to these resources. So what we do in the internet is, who cares? What we do in real life on the basis of what we have been able to do with the internet, that's where the power is. It's changing lives in real life in our local communities because of the extended relationships and resources we can bring
into it. A good word for it, extended relationship, which is expanding your social connections, the social capital. And now we need to, almost as we're growing up, start using that as a part of our relational practice. And I think that's a great part to stop this first round, but it surely won't be the last, because you've highlighted again that the face-to-face or real relationship with the relationships that are allowed through the internet that aren't time-bound present now an opportunity for us to come together with both real time and open time and build a deeper satisfaction, relationship, productivity. And there'll be more to say on that, but again, I want to thank you for sharing with us, because this dynamic between face-to-face and internet and technology is where the future is, and we're happy to be exploring that here at the Center for Relational Learning and Leadership. Again, thank you very much for your time.
You're most welcome.
And look forward to some additional podcasts. As you can see, they're pretty easy to do, and people can listen and maybe make a connection and learn, and we hope you will, and we'll visit our website. Thank you.